the law enforcement had searched an area and they didn't find her body. And then someone called law enforcement later on and was like, hey, there's these birds in this area. And they went back and searched. It was vultures that they'd seen. And then they did find the body. So with that, I was asked, do you think maybe she'd been there the whole time, or was she planted after the initial search by law enforcement?
Darkcast Network. Indie pods with a dark side.
Every raindrop reflecting on the water as the sun shuts her eyes. Don't know why you'll uncover. Watch the tide rolling with the moonlight. Everything is silent on this Louisiana night.
With us is Dr. Lauren Farr Parks to discuss the role of vultures in forensic science. Her work and research has been instrumental across the country to law enforcement and professionals in solving missing persons cases. In 2017, she gave a TED Talk on her research and this topic. She is Tennessee-based, but is no stranger to Louisiana. She obtained her PhD from LSU's Department of Geography and Anthropology, and we've only began to touch the surface of her accolades and many achievements, and we are just so privileged to have her here with us today. Welcome, Dr. Farr.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So I think like the average person, there's so many misconceptions surrounding vultures. For one, I didn't know there was a difference between vultures and buzzards. So I think you're going to have to do some basic kind of rudimentary explaining to us. But we're so interested in how you started researching this topic and then how you learned that they could be used forensically.
When I first started my career in forensic science, my research path, I thought buzzards and vultures were the same thing. I didn't know that there's a difference, but actually a buzzard is a hawk that lives in Europe. And my understanding is that when the first settlers came to America, they saw vultures and they thought they were buzzards they had back home, but the two are different. And then so in the United States, there's the California condor, which is a vulture, the black vulture and the turkey vulture. But then in Louisiana, you have the turkey vulture and the black vulture. It all started in Louisiana. I also got my master's at LSU with Mary Mannheim, the former director of the FACES lab. And I was studying decomposition in Louisiana. And I saw what I thought was buzzards. Actually, if you go find my LSU thesis, I talk about buzzards in my thesis. But what I had actually was vultures. So that just kind of like planted the seed. I went home for the Christmas holidays and I had some pigs that were decomposing under cages and something took my pigs. And so I came back for Christmas holidays and my pigs were gone. My research was gone. And I was just, you know, I was like, golly, I wish I knew what had taken my pigs and like where the pigs had gone, or if I could find the bones. So that then planted the seed for using GPS tracking for forensic studies. So I knew I wanted to continue on and do a project involving something with animal scavenging and GPS tracking. And around the time I was graduating with my master's degree, Texas State University in San Marcos opened up a forensic facility where you can or a body farm where you can donate your body to science. And it's very similar to the one in UT Knoxville. But what Texas State didn't anticipate was that they were going to have vultures at their facility. So one study had been done on the scavenging rate of vultures, but they were just opening up. I was looking for a project and I said, hey, can I come study your birds in Texas? And that's how I got rolling with that is my PhD project.
Can you tell us more about how they work with decomp and that kind of thing?
So a vulture is actually how its wings are designed. They can't hunt. They physically can't. Like their wing won't allow them to swoop down and catch a rodent like your other birds of prey. So they have to scavenge. And they are so big that they will ride a thermal. It's a little vortex that's created by pressure differences in the atmosphere. And so when you see them circling, they're actually riding a vortex and they're just going from A and B. So they don't really flap their wings. And there's been studies that have looked at the heart rate of a turkey vulture, like when it's soaring, its heart rate is not accelerated at all. So it's just a very energy efficient mode of locomotion for them. Even if the vulture wanted to hunt, it can't hunt. That's why they scavenge. And they are the only animals that are dependent upon scavenging for their food source. Hawks will scavenge and coyotes will scavenge, but they will also hunt. But the vulture is the only animal that relies on death as food. So that's what makes them the cleanup animal. We don't really know what attracts them to the body. I think it might be methane that's coming off the body, but we don't know the exact chemical that's coming off that's attracting them.
Wow, that's really interesting. What's the role of vultures in missing persons cases? How do those two collide?
I was asked to help with one case. It was actually out of Virginia. It was a podcast where I was interviewed with that. And it was the Route 29 stalker, Alicia Showalter Reynolds, I believe. But that vultures were involved. The law enforcement had searched an area and they didn't find her body. And then someone called law enforcement later on and was like, hey, there's these birds in this area. And they went back and searched. It was the vultures that they'd seen. And then they did find the body. So with that, I was asked, do you think maybe she'd been there the whole time or was she planted after the initial search by law enforcement? So that was kind of like a timeline.
Interesting. We really think the average person thinks that it's so easy to find a body out in the woods or in areas, but it is not. It is very hard. And a fresh body, it can be hard to find, more or less remains that have been there for weeks, especially in Louisiana in the summer. I'm guessing things function differently.
Very hot, very humid, and that really speeds up decomposition. The body goes into bloat really quickly. That is attract your flies, and then the maggots go and start feeding on the body. And then the smells attract other animals and your vultures, coyotes, dogs. And so tissue can go very quickly. It can leave the body very quickly in Louisiana.
How long in the game do vultures usually show up? Are they right away for fresh meat or do they need it to get gross? I guess that's my non-academic way of asking.
Yes, things can get even too gross for a vulture. Studies have proven that. So they show up, I found, between minutes after death and up to 5 days. Let's say about 3 days.
Relatively fresh remains.
Yeah, definitely fresh. So for your listeners that don't know this, the body will become very stiff after death. The muscles become tight and the body's stiff and it's rigor mortis. And I think vultures wait until rigor mortis is finished before they will scavenge. If they either get there before rigor mortis or they wait until after rigor mortis.
Interesting. And do they take the remains? Are they scattering bones and clothes or is that really not their thing?
It depends on the age of the bird. So young vultures have been likened to human teenagers, just very messy and they'll fight. And so if you have younger birds there, they will kind of scatter the bones more, but the adults tend to just go in, remove the tissues, leave the skeleton right where it is, and then they leave. They're not going to take the bones because it's too much weight for them to carry. So they'll eat, but then they leave the bones because again, they don't flap their wings, their sores. So there's a weight component to their scavenging.
Wow. Are they attracted to larger amounts of remains than smaller? So would you be more likely to see a vulture with a human remains versus a small child, or does that not matter?
It will affect the number of birds, but I have seen a vulture at LSU that had just completely perfectly scavenged a mouse. You know, it's just, they only need about 2 mice or 100 grams, which is like about 2 mice per day. So they don't need a ton of food, but dead is dead for them. And they're not selective of what they're scavenging.
So it seems like you have a lot of requests from law enforcement from varying parts of the country. Is this something that you maybe are trying to make like a protocol that law enforcement can then take back and implement themselves in their own agencies? Something that is part of the curriculum in a way?
I would love for that to happen. I mean, even if it's just that if they're aware of vulture scavenging or animal scavenging in general, because what I've noticed for so many of these decomposition studies that come out of universities, it's usually a graduate student that's doing it, and you have a very limited amount of time and financial resources. So the carcass that they're using for their research project is often caged, and the animal scavengers are intentionally excluded. I did that for my master's thesis. You know, I had a limited time, so I was looking at decomposition rates in Louisiana for sun versus shade, but pig carcasses were caged, and that doesn't present an accurate picture. I mean, it's great for getting baseline data, but every study can't involve concealing the remains or shielding them from animal scavengers. So just to make law enforcement aware that, hey, you're likely to have animals at your crime scene would be what I would want to implement. Because for my PhD research, I went to Texas and I placed over 40 pigs uncaged in Texas, and 100% of them were scavenged by animals. 100%. So flies arrived, they laid their eggs, maggots developed and started consuming the carcass. But then the animals came in and stripped the body of the soft tissue and left you with a skeleton. So that's a more realistic picture and scenario. And that's what law enforcement should be trained or just have it in the back of your mind. Hey, if we find skeletal remains, there likely was some animal scavenging and they would have sped up decomposition.
That's a really good example. And I might steal that from you and use it when I teach research medicine to grad students. Because we talk about, you know, this balance between validity and reliability, right? You have more validity in a more controlled setting, but that's not generalizable out there in the world, right? And that's exactly what you're talking about. Like if they're caged, you have that control that you need so you can isolate these variables, but you're moving further away from what a real world setting would look like.
At the forensic facilities. You know, LSU now has a decomp facility by the airport in Baton Rouge, and they're aware that we're caging our stuff, and like, it's probably not realistic to what's going on out in our forensic cases, but it's a great way for us to get skeletal remains to study these facilities, which are very valuable. I don't want to discredit anything about the forensic facilities, but there's usually a fence that goes around the property to keep out human spectators and animals. And then there is a cage that goes on top of the body to prevent any critter that might get in from taking a leg and leaving it in someone's yard. And then the university ends up with a lawsuit because a human leg is found in someone's front yard. So these bodies are highly protected from scavenging. We need to let the law enforcement community know that, hey, what's going on inside of these fenced, highly secure areas is probably not what you're going to see in the woods in Louisiana when it's just an open area.
And what kind of creatures tend to show up and scavenge and mess things up?
You have your vultures. Hawks will scavenge. Coyotes, domestic dogs. I've seen cats, skunks, gray foxes. The little more songbirds like the maggots and the bugs. Skunk. I think the skunks and the foxes are more after the bugs, the insects that are there. There's a plethora. Bobcats. Louisiana does have the black bear. I don't know if there's been any scavenging studies of Louisiana black bear, but I know in California they've done bear studies with the scavenging of bears.
And I've been reading about feral hogs being a problem.
They all scavenge too. I forgot about them. And I even read a report where a deer has gnawed on bones.
Oh, how complicated that must be for law enforcement.
Yeah.
So it really makes you think when you hear, oh, scattered remains found in such and such, people will immediately go to like devil worshiping, but it's probably more likely animals, right?
Yes. Yes. I would say so.
Could you give us an example of a case that maybe has stood out to you as memorable for whatever reason, so we can learn a bit about some real world examples?
The one that sticks out, it was a Louisiana case. There was a missing person, and the law enforcement wanted to know, could they use the vultures to try to find the body? I said, probably not. I mentioned earlier, vultures don't discriminate between a human and a raccoon because they're riding a vortex. So it's very hard to use a vulture in the air to locate a body. But I said, if you find the body, look for these feathers on the ground. That's a good indicator that they have been there. And so then I got the phone call a little later on that, hey, we found the body and we found these feathers, but the feathers were not near the body. And so I was able to use my research to figure out, hey, why would the vultures be away from the body? They don't wander. They're very energy conscious animals, I would say. So it's not like they're hanging out and wandering all around. So the fact that a vulture was lured away from the body told me either it's pretty gruesome, either brain matter was there or guts that would cause a vulture to leave the body. And it turned out that this individual that they found had been hit over the head, and there was brain matter about 40 yards from where the body was. And so everything I'd done with my research was represented in this case.
All of that physical evidence could be gone.
Yes. But humans are very complicated. We are very complicated creatures. But the animals, they usually stick to a very predictable pattern. As a criminologist, do you see patterns that are consistent in the criminal behavior? Or is it all over the place?
No, I always tell my students there will never be one theory that will ever explain someone's behavior. And even when we develop typologies and profiles for serial killers, there will always be a serial killer that breaks the mold. And then every serial killer who even kills a type, right? We think serial killers have a type, right? I might prefer brunette women with long hair, but it's opportunity. And if there's a blonde woman that's at that moment where my stresses are hit, I'm going to get that blonde woman, right? We are bad at predicting human behavior.
Okay. So yeah, I think that's why I gravitate towards the birds. They're more predictable.
Absolutely.
Is there any other animal, if you had time, that you would consider researching and studying, if you could, in this way, forensically?
I would love to study coyotes and know more about them. It's actually a case I'm working on right now. I think I got the phone call because they thought it was vulture scavenging, but it's coyote scavenging. And I've seen enough of it in my research to where I feel comfortable writing a report on it. But I would love to know more about how they interact with the vultures. If they have a symbiotic relationship, do they work together differently? And coyotes would be my next animal.
Yeah, you're right. That would be fascinating. And then I immediately think about the cats. You know, every once in a while you'll hear about a bunch of dead cats in a neighborhood or whatever.
Yeah.
And then people are like, oh my God, we have a baby serial killer. They're murdering all the cats. And then like weeks later, they'll be like, oh, we caught a coyote.
Right.
And the remains will look bizarre. Like it'll be a decapitated cat. And people think that's an animal torturer, but it's the creature. So that would be really interesting. Yeah. And then I wonder what the role vultures have in that. People probably just always blame coyotes.
we have an app where I live. It's called Next Door. And people are always supposed to like, you know, they're like, vulture, they're going to eat my dog. They're going to eat my cat. I'm like, no, it's your hawks, your owls. Those are the ones that are much more likely to go after your small little toy poodle than the vulture. So the vultures often get blamed for a lot of things that they aren't guilty of.
Yeah. And they're just showing up after the fact.
Yeah.
Are there any other myths about vultures that people have that you think we could talk about?
In literature, vultures are associated with like aggressive behavior. Politicians are called vultures because they're just ruthless. And so I just thought all vultures are ruthless and aggressive. And I started one of my first projects. It was 2010. I went down to Texas to learn more about the vultures, and I had a pig. I put it in a cage. That's what I've been taught to do. And I said, these vultures are so aggressive, then they will come, they'll just knock the cage over. If animal scavenging is legit, they're so aggressive, they'll knock the cage over. They didn't do that. They're smart enough to know that there is a cage. They can see a 6-foot object from a mile away. They're smart enough to know whether something is accessible or not. And so they were not interested in this caged pig. As soon as I removed that cage, that pig was skeletonized in minutes. And it's just like, wow. So it's like, these birds are smart. They can take a pig about the size of a football, just a little baby pig, and just strip it of all of its flesh, leave a perfect skeleton, and then they fly away. And they're aggressive when they're scavenging and removing the tissue, but they're also very, very smart.
Unlike owls, which are not that smart, I've learned recently, right? I've heard that they have non-wrinkly brains. I went to an animal preserve and they were
talking
about owls, and that it's actually an insult to be called smart like an owl.
Learn something new every day.
Been the vultures all along.
I mean, they've been here for so long. I mean, millions of years. So they're doing something right.
That's right.
We ask Michelle and we ask guests frequently, you know, with death, there's got to be a balance. What's your kind of hobby or your kind of decompress from all of that?
I love to exercise. I go to exercise classes. I like to garden. I'm always buying and planting flowers. So I think that I find that to be very therapeutic. But then I've learned how to just shut it out. I don't know how. I see a case and I go into just research science mode. I usually, I'll say like a silent thought for the victim, say, I'm so sorry this happened to you. And then I just go to work. I can decompartmentalize it very well.
Yeah, either that or I think I'd just never eat. So,
right. So the forensic cases don't really bother me. And I don't want your audience to be like, this girl's psycho. Because I look at it and I hone in on the evidence that I am specialized and trained in. And so it doesn't really bother me to look at this stuff. But then other life things like cleaning the shower drain. Oh, I find that disgusting. You know, changing my son's diaper. Oh, that's so gross. I find it interesting that some life things gross me out. But then in these cases, they don't faze me.
Yeah, it's like you're seeing the trees, not the forest.
Right.
I'm just always impressed. I'm starting to wonder, I guess it's selection bias to an extent, but every time we do another interview, I'm like, how do we find so many badass women? Like, there's just so many women that we come across. Maybe we're cherry picking, but it's just, here you are, another woman out there just kicking ass and doing the stuff that needs to be done. And it sounds like you're another one of those. And we just want to thank you. We see you.
Oh, you're sweet. Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Is there anything that we didn't get to ask you that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I'll say that a neat thing that I learned through my dissertation research, you're in academia, so you know all about applying for grants and trying to get research money. And I applied to the NIJ for money for my dissertation, and they came back and said, because I was trying to use GPS transmitters attached to the bird to figure out where the vultures were scavenging. And I was trying to get money for the GPS transmitters, and the NIJ, National Institute of Justice, came back and said, pretty much, cool project, but we don't care where the birds are scavenging. We want to know if they have scavenged. And I had been collecting all of the vulture feathers from these different scavenging sites. And I went to the Ornithology Museum at the Smithsonian and met with a lady named Carla Dove. And she was like, oh, this is so easy. We can help you with this. So each bird has a unique microstructure in their feather. So you can narrow it down to the species of bird. So if you find a feather, you can look at it under the microscope and tell what type of bird it is. And so I was real, after the NIJ came back, it was like, they really ticked me off. So it motivated me. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to answer their question for them. And they might not give me money, but come hell or high water, I'm going to figure out what the key is.
Yeah. I love that. I also love that there's someone named Dove.
Yes. And she's the bird expert. She's like the foremost bird expert in the United States. So yeah. So if she's listening, hi, Carla. Thank you for your help.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Has been really, really interesting. I'm going to tell everyone I know all these things that I've learned.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And is there any way the public can donate to your research or any way they can get involved?
I have a website called farforensicconsulting.com. If they have friends or family or they're in law enforcement, tell them, hey, there's a woman that would like to help with scavenging cases, because most of my cases are rural areas and the law enforcement there, they don't have a forensic scientist on full-time staff. So that is mostly who I work with. And I love to help the more rural communities that just need a one-time consult, or, oh, we did have this case. Would you be willing to look at it? So that's the best way they could help to maybe get some of these solved.
Absolutely. And those rural communities are unlikely to know that you ever exist. So
right.
Big help to raise awareness. Awesome. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.